Well, if you're like me, you live a busy life. You don't really have time for many days off. That's why I talk so much about your mitochondria, because they generate about 90% of the energy your body uses. And keeping your mitochondria strong is one of the best ways to keep fatigue at bay. But these little mitochondria, darn things, are expensive to run. They use a huge amount of raw materials, especially when it comes to minerals. The problem is most people, including you and me, probably don't get enough minerals. And without minerals, your mitochondria don't have the cofactors they need to make energy. More than 97% of Americans don't get enough potassium. About 80% are deficient in magnesium. 40% are deficient in calcium. And those are three of the big ones. There's close to a dozen other trace minerals that are important for mitochondrial function, and most of us don't get enough of them, and you definitely can't get them from, say, table salt. It turns out that trying to take all the minerals you need by taking single mineral supplements isn't only hard because you need a ton of pills, but it's not the most effective way to get your minerals. That's why I take liquid, humic, and fulvic complexes. These are full spectrum mineral supplements, which means you get all the essential minerals your body needs in one go without a daily handful of massive amounts of pills or very large capsules or anything else that's hard to swallow. I use Beam mineral supplements because they're almost 100% bioavailable. They come in a liquid form that's easy to drink. It's just two bottles. I keep them in my pantry, throw back a shot a few times a day. They're a great way to refill your mineral stores, especially for those of you out here who are haunting your sauna on a frequent basis, or sweating, or doing hot yoga, or anything else. Keep your mitochondria running strong. So if you want to up your mineral game, give Beam Minerals a try. Go to Beam Minerals, B-E-A-M, minerals.com, and use code BEN at checkout for 20% off your first order. Well, if you're tired of spending hours on cardio with minimal results, then listen up, because I got a game-changing fitness breakthrough for you. The Carol Bike, science-backed, time-saving solution trusted by experts for optimizing health and longevity. They use this special form of a workout called a rehit, which allows you to achieve superior health and fitness benefits compared to regular cardio in 90% less time. That's amazing. That's a lot of time, 90%. Studies show that by doing Carol's 5-minute workout just three times a week, you can improve your fitness by 12%, reduce your risk of type 2 diabetes by 62%, and even wind back your internal body clock by 10 years. The science is clear. Carol Bike is your ticket to a healthier and more vibrant life. You got to try it to believe it and to see what I'm saying. I mean, it's not like a walk in the park. When you're pushing hard in those intervals, you're pushing, but then it's just like over and it's done and it walks you through it. It's very motivating. It's 5 feet away from me right now. It's right here in my office, my cool little exercise toy in my office. So you get $250 off your Carol Bike. You don't have to wait any longer. You can join over 25,000 riders and visit carolbike.com today. carolbike.com.
Welcome to the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast. We provide you with everything you need to know for total performance, fat loss, recovery, digestion, sleep, brain, and hormone optimization. So whether you're an Ironman triathlete or you just want to shed a few pounds, get ready for non-run-of-the-mill cutting-edge content from BenGreenfieldFitness.com.
Welcome to the show. Cool. We are ready to rock and roll. I'm Ben Greenfield, of course, and across from me is Kenton Claremont. Now, before we jump into today's show, you may be interested in the fact that we are sitting at a Rebel desk, and you can get $40 off a Rebel desk. It might be 50 or 60. I'm really not sure. I don't remember. But use code BEN at rebeldesk.com. And you can also get a Rebel desk chair as well if you use code Greenfield. So grab your Rebel desk, which Kenton and I are comfortably lounging on. And I'm going to kick my dog out of here. Then we're going to rock and roll. Come here, boy. All right. So, Ken.
Yes, sir.
Fellow Vandal.
Yeah.
It's University of Idaho. What do you do?
Right now, for most of my time, I'm a cowboy. I'm a rancher. I basically work at a big mommy factory. There's 700 cattle on the ranch, and we take care of them until they kick the cows out, and we take care of the calves and the mamas until it's time to sell them and fix fence and feed cows and all that. But the exciting thing that I do is I train people online. I train hunters specifically.
Yeah.
And then even a step up from that is the Train to Hunt Challenge. I run Train to Hunt Challenge races. Right now, they're all over the West. Everything, Washington, Arizona, Idaho, Wyoming, Colorado. And I just put people kind of to the test test whether they're efficient with it, with archery equipment, and see how fit they are.
I want to pick your brain about the Train to Hunt stuff here in a little bit. But you and I have crossed paths before. I know that you ran a CrossFit facility in Spokane Valley, and even farther back than that, you were a baseball player at the same college that I played tennis for.
That's right.
Lewis Clark State College.
Yeah, we were Lewis Clark State athletes, baby.
Yeah. Yeah, so you played baseball. I played tennis. Yep. I went on to University of Idaho, and I studied sports science. And you were up there as well.
Yeah, I was. I was there studying sports psychology. So that's exactly what happened. Was I got out of graduate or undergraduate school and didn't make the big. Just like, you know, when you're a little kid, that's all you ever plan on doing is being a professional athlete, and that didn't pan out. So I started teaching, and I was teaching at a private school in North Idaho, and then decided, you know, I really want to coach baseball again, but I have to go back to graduate school to do that because I want to coach college baseball. Mm-hmm. And so I went back to University of Idaho, and I thought, there's nothing better to marry, you know, a kinesiology degree with a sports psychology degree to coach athletes, and especially baseball players.
Yeah.
They're all psychos.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I hear. Now, that was the one sport I played until eighth grade. And I was the pitcher. And the joke, of course, is that I was the pitcher in the pitching machine league. So I was the guy who stood by the pitching machine and put the ball into the pitching machine.
All right.
And that was my big experience with baseball. A lot of professional baseball players on my mom's side, but I never really got into that sport as much as hitting a little green fuzzy ball into the racket.
Yeah.
After you graduated from University of Idaho, I know you eventually wound up at a CrossFit facility up here in Spokane Valley because – that was where I met your partner, at least at the time. But between baseball and getting involved with the CrossFit box, what were you doing?
Yeah, well, I went to graduate school and then figured out that it's not as easy as you would think to get a college coaching job, even with a graduate degree. And, you know, there's really good jobs and they're not easy to come by. So I was just kind of hanging out waiting to see if something would come up working at the private school again. And really probably the thing that happened to me the most and landed me in Spokane for sure was I came down with rheumatoid arthritis and had a really big bump in the road there for about a year. And to go from being a college athlete and then in my mid-20s, I played some professional baseball for the Pirates organization. And then when I was 30 years old, I got diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis and did some research and really found out that they didn't really know a ton about rheumatoid arthritis, where it came from. There's some people that will speculate that it's from allergies and that kind of thing. But I knew that I needed to start moving. I knew I needed to get into the fitness industry and specifically, you know, personal training so I could just be moving all the time and keep my joints going. So I moved to Spokane and I was a trainer at a big box gym and then opened up CrossFit Spokane Valley with Dan Staten. And we ran that facility for about 5 years.
Yeah. I went there a few times. I did a few wads. My brother, Zach, he worked out there. He's kind of a beast. We're talking about him a little bit earlier. Zach is, he's been at BenGreenfieldFitness.com. If you go there and do a search for Zach Greenfield, he's in the article about how to build muscle on a high fat diet. And he used to be models. So there's a bunch of modeling photos of him there.
Oh yeah, that's right.
He dragged me over to that box. But were you there when he was training there?
I was. Okay. I actually, in fact, I saw Zach most of the time. He's training in the morning. I was the morning guy, so I'd get in there and train Zach. He's a great guy. He's fun to be around and. And just an athletic build guy. Just a great guy.
That's funny. Zach knows that I do a lot of stuff on the internet. And he approached me last year about the internet business. He's like, I want to do stuff on the internet. Cause right now he's a paramedic and a firefighter. So I told him he should just start selling stuff on Amazon. Like just, you know, what people do a lot of the time. And I know if you're listening in or watching, you, you might wonder about how you make money on Amazon. Basically, you order stuff from a website like Alibaba or some other wholesale website, and you source it, and then Amazon, you store it in Amazon's warehouses. You list it on Amazon. If you list it correctly and you've got the right follow-up mechanisms in place and you solicit reviews and everything, you can increase your ranking on Amazon. And so he started selling kitchen gloves.
Really?
Kitchen gloves on Amazon and netted $300,000 in the past 30 days alone. So kitchen gloves. I'm like, pretty soon I'm going to have to come to him for a loan because actually the margins on kitchen gloves are pretty good.
Apparently,
so,
yeah.
So he's rocking it.
Holy cow. There must be a high demand for kitchen gloves.
I guess so. It's the number one ranked kitchen glove on Amazon. So
who knew?
I know.
Apparently exactly.
Yeah. So anyways, you ran this CrossFit box for a while, and I think that briefly, Dan, your partner at the CrossFit box, he had mentioned to me about this train and hunt program. I honestly, at that time, I wasn't that interested in hunting and hadn't really gotten into farming and gardening or anything like that.
Yeah.
So I wasn't super interested in it. But then Shad Wheeler, I interviewed Shad in a show about endurance and hunting. You know, hunting can be used as a passive mode of fitness. And he mentioned your name as well. And then I looked into the whole train to hunt thing, and it's crazy. I mean, it really is pretty cool what you're doing. And I want to pick your brain a little bit about it, like I mentioned, but, how'd you go from running the CrossFit box into doing that?
Well, it was one of those things that Dan and I both really enjoyed hunting, and we would take the whole month of September off, and we would just, we'd employ people to just do our classes so that we could hunt for the whole month of September. And it was something that we really had in common. We were both entrepreneur minded. We both loved to work out. We both loved to hunt. So we knew there was a market out there for training the hunter specifically, because in general, most of the hunters that we have been exposed to, mostly our dads and, you know, our dads' friends and that kind of thing, they weren't big into going to the gym and lifting weights and hit the treadmill and that kind of thing, but they did want to be in shape for hunting. And so most of them would just get in shape during the season. And we thought, man, that's a huge mistake. There's a lot of guys out there that are getting hurt, having heart attacks, that are passing on opportunities because of their fitness level.
Are there really guys out there getting heart attacks?
It is probably the number one killer in hunting is heart attacks.
Really?
Now, you have to consider that most of the hunting in the United States is done east of the Mississippi.
Yeah.
And so most of the hunting out there, and I'm not knocking the way those guys hunt out there, but most of their hunting out there isn't real physical. It's mostly their physical part is setting up food plots and setting up tree stands and working the ground. And sometimes they, you know, they'll hire that out and then they'll go out and they'll shoot a deer. And then they're dragging it out. And one of the hardest things to do.
So they're not training up to the shot and then they're having to drag it out.
And then they're grabbing this buck and they're dragging it out. And within 200 yards, their heart rate is through the roof.
Yeah.
And they have heart attacks.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's
I mean, I'm in shape. And the last buck I shot was literally like, you know, 150 yards from where we're sitting right now, you know, on the forest. So I only had to drag it a football field.
Right.
I was gassed. Oh. I mean, it's tough.
Yeah. Dragging dead weight is no joke. And I think that guys want to be in shape, but they didn't want to go to the gym. They wanted to train like a hunter. They wanted somebody to give them a program to follow where they could put their pack on their back, go out in the backyard, grab their bow, do some exercising, kind of hide the exercise and the fitness, if you will. You know, like kind of like with what you do with kids. You know,
right.
Like, we're going to play tag for 5 minutes, and they run around, and they're lo and behold, they're getting some exercise.
Yeah.
With some people who prefer outside do-it-yourself fitness, let's say, you just kind of hide their programming in – backpacks and shooting, and in between there you make them do some exercises and they'll do them so that they get to the shooting part or get to the packing part.
Have you ever run into a situation where somebody basically either lost an animal or destroyed a hunt because they weren't fit enough? You know, these guys back east who are dropping dead of heart attacks.
You know, there is, I've never been with somebody who has lost an animal, but I've been with tons of guys who have just passed on opportunities that they've literally been, will say, no, there's a bull down there because he's bugling. But there's no way that I can get down there and then get him out of there. There's just no way. So we're going to have to let him walk. Mm-hmm. And So it's not so much that guys will get themselves, that I've experienced, guys getting themselves in really life-threatening
situations. It's just more like lost opportunities.
Lost opportunities.
Yeah. Interesting. So heart attacks is one thing that happens. What else have you seen out there when people are trying to get their own food that holds them back?
I think just when you get fatigue, you don't have as much confidence. Mm-hmm. You won't go places that you normally will go. I've heard stories. I have a buddy who hunts back in Arkansas, and he was mm-hmm. telling me about somebody who he had set up on this tree stand, and the guy went in there, and he saw 15 bucks opening morning. Holy cow. Walked back to the cabin. They were sitting around talking about the day, and Tim said, "Hey, are you going to go back into that stand?" And the guy said, "No way I'm going back to that stand. That is way too far." And Tim said, "It is 1 mile from where they were having 1 mile on flat ground." So it's really just missed opportunities and guys really putting up these huge limitations that are unnecessary only because they're choosing not to be in shape.
Is part of that like the culture of hunting? And I know this is partially stereotyping, but you've got like, you know, pickup trucks, chicken wings, fried food, beers. Sitting around. A lot of beer, a lot of carbohydrates, a lot of excessive body weight. So, you know, poor body to power weight ratio. Yep. And I'm curious, like, how far fitness has pervaded the hunting culture versus kind of the more pervasive or the seemingly more pervasive kind of sit around and just basically eat crap food and
drive your truck down the road until you see something and shoot it. You know, that's a good question. I have been in the hunting, you know, circle, I guess, my whole life. I was raised hunting. And in the last probably 5 years, you're seeing a lot more people being aware of their fitness. And I think that there's a few things that are happening. Number one, a guy, Cameron Haynes, I don't know if you've heard of Cameron Haynes, but he's really kind of brought fitness into the hunting world as a tool, like your bow, like your camo. Fitness is a tool. You know, guys have been doing it for a long time. Dwight Shue's been doing it. I mean, Dwight Shue's been doing ultra marathons for a long time. And Cam was just
What's his name? Dwight Shue?
Dwight Shue. Yeah. He was kind of the original get in shape guy to go hunting. And there's pictures of Cam doing ultra marathons and Dwight Shue's in the background and tying his shoes at the same station as he is. I mean, the guy's an animal.
Compare your fitness scores, your Fran time to those guys.
You know, they don't do Fran. They don't do Fran.
They aren't CrossFitters?
No, they're not. They're not.
See, I was – and I don't want to talk crap about people too much, but I actually went to Cameron's YouTube page yesterday because I knew you were coming over tonight, and I wanted to kind of check out what some of the other people were doing.
Sure.
And he looked like he was throwing around a barbell doing some deadlifts or something like that, but he's not a CrossFitter?
No, Cam is – His motto is lift, run, shoot. And Cameron Haynes...
Lift, run, shoot.
Lift, run, shoot. Cameron Haynes lifts, runs, and shoots every single day without exception. That's what I believe Cameron to be known for. Just his just doing it every day.
Sounds like just like stubborn consistency.
Stubborn consistency.
Yeah. What do you do?
Well,
are you mostly still doing CrossFit?
You know, I do actually train to hunt and workouts, which here's the thing about CrossFit. And a lot of people have asked me this. What isn't training to hunt just CrossFit? Mm-hmm. Now, CrossFit has done a really good job. And again, I'm not talking bad about anybody, and I don't think this is going to come off bad. But CrossFit's done a really good job of actually classifying everything as CrossFit because it's constantly varied functional movements performed at high intensity. Now, they also say
– and they have to make money off CrossFit. Brand.
That's right. Yeah. And so if you lift a weight, it's CrossFit. If you run an ultra marathon, it's CrossFit. If you run with a bow and shoot, that's really considered CrossFit because it's constantly varied. The idea behind CrossFit is pull three exercises out of a hopper, and that's what you do for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So everything is really CrossFit. What I do is a version of CrossFit, which is train to hunt, but specifically for hunting, which is a lot more – weighted walks or light weighted runs mixed with a lot more like I do box mountain climbers and burpees and moving your body with weight on your back, just like you're going to be doing in the mountains. And then shooting your
when you say moving your body with weight on your back, yeah. Do you mean that that you're doing your train to hunt wads? Do you call them wads? Same as CrossFit?
Or I call them workouts.
Okay, workouts.
Yeah.
Your train to hunt workouts. Are you doing those like wearing a weighted vest or rucksack or something like that, or you're just saying weight on your back like a barbell or a dumbbell?
Most of the time it's a pack. Uh-huh. We'll do 200 meter interval sprints with like a 50 pound like sandbag. Mm-hmm. So do a 400 meter sprint and then do 20 ground to shoulders and then mm-hmm. take 3 minutes to recover and do 4 to 8
right.
rounds.
Right.
So it's most of the time I'm trying to simulate that same movement that you're going to get in the mountains, because believe it or not, most hunters have to dust their backpacks off.
Yeah.
Before hunting season, they'll be in the gym. They'll be doing bench. They'll be doing squat. They'll be doing curls. They'll even, doing some elliptical, even some running. But then they get hunting season comes around and they dust off their bow. They dust off their pack, and yeah. Now they're going. And I think that's just a mistake.
When you're using a pack, are you using like the nice, like, like a Kelty internal frame pack, or do you just have like a crappy rucksack that you fill with weight and throw around?
I use top of the line. Mm-hmm. I use a Kafaru pack, which is an internal.
That was my mistake when I was training for Seal Fit. Well, I heard about the packs that they give you down there at US CrossFit, and they're literally like a $25-$30 pack you can get off Amazon.
Oh, really?
No frame. No. It's
like a book bag.
No, it's basically a book bag that you fill with sandbags. So I trained for that thing all summer, and if you look at my back, I've got scars going up and down my lower back because that it rubs and the sand chafes and the weights bounce up and down in it. And I show up to Seal Fit for the week-long academy that happens like before you jump into like the 60 hours of Kokora suffering.
Kokora, baby.
There's a bunch of guys there with like these fancy like internal frame packs where I'm rucking every day. Yeah. And by the end of that week, by the time I got into Kokora, I was destroyed. Like my back, like my traps were destroyed. And I just had no clue about choosing a proper backpack to carry weight.
Yeah.
With you, when you're out there doing your training hunts, you've got like an internal frame, like good pack filled with weight.
Absolutely. And we actually do gear review videos mm-hmm. showing people how to properly fit yourself to a pack.
Right.
The importance of not saving your good pack for hunting and using your book bag for training mm-hmm. because you're going to spend way more time in your training bag than you are your hunting bag. You can always just wash it because you don't want to end up with scars and
That's the problem. It's just like your traps are all
you get hammered
all the time, and you just destroyed. So
hey, quick break here. This is Jessica Greenfield, Ben's boss. I mean wife. I'm not sure if you know this, but Ben, being the complete nerd that he is, keeps track of everything he's ever recommended and found to work really well, and puts it all over at greenfieldfitnesssystems.com. From books to lab tests to supplements, he has it all there. So whether you want to build muscle, burn fat, fix your gut, sleep better, balance hormones, learn about smart drugs, whatever, it's all there. Check it out at greenfieldfitnesssystems.com. Okay, now back to the podcast.
Before I ask you a little bit about what goes on at these train to hunt competitions that you put on, help me wrap my head a little bit more around like what your workout looks like start to finish. Like what's like one of your go-to workouts as far as how you guys are warming up, what you're doing during the workout as far as carrying around these dead weights and stuff, and then what happens after.
Okay, so
and by the way, one of the reasons I asked this is like if you look at a CrossFit wad, like 20-40 minutes, you look at like a Seal Fit wad, right?
So
like Mark Devine stuff.
Okay.
That's the warm-up. And you're out there for like 3 hours on the grinder. So I'm curious what it is that you're doing.
So I still have to cater to guys who have families and they have a limited amount of time. So during the week, man, most of the time, we always do some sort of a dynamic warm-up, which includes, you're doing everything from
hey, boy. Go ahead.
You're doing everything from giant walks to,
come on. Giant walks?
Yeah. You're doing
what's a giant walk?
Giant walks when you're standing, when you're walking across, you're just taking big walks and you're kicking your hand. And
okay, yeah, like Frankenstein walks.
Yeah, so you're gonna get a good sweat, good proper warm up. You're doing the inchworm. You're basically just getting a good total warm up, and then you're gonna jump right into the workout. And most of the time, you're gonna do 2 to 3 different movements. Most of them are going to be gymnastics. I don't have a ton of weightlifting. We will do something strength at the beginning at 3 times a week. We'll do like a squat. Mm-hmm. We'll do a dead. We'll do a shoulder press. And then we'll go into our conditioning, which, you know, you're doing 2 or 3 movements, whether it be a box jump, a burpee, some sort of a running, a sandbag around your shoulder, any varieties of a burpee. And then at the end of each round, you'll shoot your bow from various positions, from a kneeling position, from a standing position.
So you're doing the workout, and then at some point during the workout, you're actually taking out your weapon and shooting.
That's right.
That's right.
So it's
– while you're gassed or somewhat gassed.
It is. The idea is to teach – I get that question a lot too, is aren't you teaching guys bad habits by having them pick up their weapon and they're all wobbly and mm-hmm. their brain's not functioning well? And I argue that when you're hunting – and you've been walking all day, you're going to have some fatigue. And mm-hmm. when it happens quick in the woods. And I mean, you've hunted before. It seems to happen pretty quick. And your heart can jump.
Yeah.
You're not clear minded. So it's a really good opportunity to teach yourself a shooting routine. Like,
right.
You're going to do 2 box press and then focus. I'm going to draw, bubble, anchor, shoot. Mm-hmm. So I am stressing them out. And then having them shoot.
You guys use the box breathing, huh? The count in, hold.
Yeah.
That's so good for settling down.
It is.
You know, a lot of, I guess I've never had the opportunity to actually do a full box breath before taking a shot. I don't hunt out of stands or blinds or anything. I'm just usually, you know, standing behind a tree.
Yeah.
But as far as sympathetic nervous system activation goes, the ability to quickly settle it down is something that I think can be taught, you know, whether it's alternate nostril breathing or box breathing or just like getting yourself quickly from one mindset to another. So that's interesting that you do your shooting during the actual walk.
That's right.
How do you set that up? Like are guys off working out by themselves, like out in the trees, just out where they've got a little bit of range to shoot from, or are they just like doing this in their backyard shooting at a hay bale or something?
All the above. Most guys are doing it at just in their backyard. Mm-hmm. And some guys are doing it in their workout room, and they're shooting at 5 feet.
Right.
You know, in their house. And some guys are going to a range, and some guys just don't have access to anywhere to shoot. So they're doing the workout minus the shooting.
Yeah.
And then Saturdays is always a big long day, because hunting is usually a long day.
You don't see the long days in CrossFit.
You don't see those long days. And I think it's something that is really missing from the gold standard.
Yeah.
They're trying stamina. Yeah, they're trying
slow twitch stamina.
Yeah, they're trying, but it's still not. It's still, in my opinion, it's still kind of the missing X factor.
Yeah. That's why I think, you know, arguably, even though I haven't run into many of your train to hunt devotees yet, I think that the average like good Spartan athlete, for example, or obstacle racer is better than a CrossFitter because of that endurance component.
Sure.
Like one of the guys that I hang out with, Hunter McIntyre, he can lift just as much weight. You know, this gym that we're next to, you know, we're working out, he can throw weight around.
Yeah.
But the dude can also just like take off and run a half marathon in the mountains. Like it's nothing.
Yeah.
And I agree. That's kind of the missing component is the stamina and the endurance.
It is. And I mean, they've got a lot of things going for them, and I really enjoy CrossFit. And it's really when I discovered CrossFit methodology, I guess is the best way to describe it. It really made me, it was something I've been looking for forever. Since I was a little kid, I have been a 4 to 5 sport athlete. I mean, I played football and then wrestled and then did track and then played baseball. And when I could, I played basketball. I mean, I did everything because I was pretty darn good at everything, but never really great at one thing. And so when I found the CrossFit methodology or the philosophy behind it, I thought that's exactly what I believe people should strive for, is to not be too one-sided. And when I first discovered the whole idea of this, cross training has been around for a long time, but when it was actually put into words, and I read it about, it doesn't matter if you can run a 4-minute mile if you can't do a single pull up, because it just doesn't seem to be in your best interest.
But even with CrossFit, right? Like, from a functional standpoint, they're not doing the endurance. But the other thing it sounds like you have is you got to, during the workout, engage in accuracy and precision and firing a weapon. Always a bow or ever a firearm for this reason.
You know, I do. There has been a couple people who have done with a firearm, and I tell them that really your only alternative is either work out at a firing range, which has its risks, or you can dry fire your weapon and just put a dot on the wall, get behind the gun, squeeze, click, and then go off and
do your paintball gun.
Yeah, something like that. But most of the guys I have right now are bow hunters, only because I think just out of necessity, most guys who do, and I'm generalizing, but most guys who do a lot of the deep backcountry stuff are mostly bow hunters.
Why is that?
You know, I think it's just because the mentality of a bow hunter is more adventure seeking. Mm-hmm. I think that's why people bow hunt. That's why I bow hunt. I've been asked the question many times if I rifle hunt, and I said, "Oh yeah, I rifle hunt. You know, I've done it." Well, why do you bow hunt? And I said, "Well, it's because I'm not that hungry."
Yeah.
Because if I'm hungry, I'm not bow hunting.
Right.
And that's kind of where that's why the bow hunting population, I believe, is building so quickly. It's because we're adventure seekers.
Right.
You know, we are men and women who are seeking adventure in the things that we love in nature. And so,
but it's still functional. You're still eating what you shoot, right?
Completely. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And you'd be hard pressed to find a bow hunter who isn't a real respectful to nature and an animal, and they're super diligent about meat care in the field and that kind of thing. And for the most part, I mean, the guys that I hang out with and choose to put myself around, they're all real diligent about the animals that they take, because there's something special about an animal giving up their lives so that yours can go on.
What's the most challenging place that you've ever hunted where this fitness has really been put to the test for you?
Well, I did a 10-day hunt in the Brooks Mountain Range in Alaska for dull sheep, and this was a drop us off, unload all our gear, and wave the plane goodbye, and they take off, and we're off. I would say the single.
Is that just like on your own, or did you go up there with like a hunting outfit or something?
I don't know. My brother and myself, and a friend of my brother's, who's an anesthesiologist out of Fairbanks, and we threw our, I think we, 75 pounds, what we had in our packs, that was our whole lives for 10 days.
Yeah.
And we took off, and I think we walked for about 11 hours that day. And that was probably one of the hardest days that I've ever come across, because we got dropped thinking that we were probably 8 miles from where we wanted to pitch camp. Mm-hmm. And as soon as the plane took off, we dropped our map and started looking. You're like, we are 11. We're 11 miles from where we thought we were being dropped.
Yeah.
Then. So we took off. We walked that.
When was this?
This was last year.
Okay.
Yeah. We walked 11 miles and then and we're pooped. I mean, we just walked 11 miles in the tundra, and tundra's kind of like walking on a waterbed.
Right.
Right. So it's not real easy stuff. And now we decide we're going to turn and go up. We're going to gain 3,000 feet elevation. So we have to walk a mile to the river, and we fill up our 6-liter bags of water, and then we hike back and then hike up the mountain 3,000 feet. We got there at 11 o'clock at night. Wow. And at that time, it's early August. It's basically light year round, or the whole 24 hours.
Right.
So yeah, we were there at 11 o'clock. Man, I'm bushed. We looked at our watch. Well, no wonder we're bushed. We've been walking for 12 hours. So that was probably the single most challenging day.
That was the first 12 hours of 10 days.
That was the first 12 hours of 10 days. Yeah. We ended up shooting two dall sheep about, I think it was like 13 miles from the airstrip. And so I packed out my pack and then an entire sheep 13 miles.
How much weight was that?
It was 145 pounds. 145 pounds.
How'd you pack out the sheep? Did you put that in your pack?
Yep. Yep. Just
did you quarter it and everything
just
first?
Yep, boned it out. We cooled it. Yeah. We cooled it by the creek. And funny story, because we shot a dall sheep on opening day. Mm-hmm. And then we took care of that one and put it down by the creek so it could cool, so that you know, bacteria didn't grow on it and stuff.
Right.
And then we went up, back up into the hills. I shot my sheep on day two, came back down and put it back in the cache.
Yeah.
Checked the meat, had a thermometer, made sure it was below temperature so bacteria couldn't grow on it. And then we were gone for a couple days, came back, and the horns of my sheep were gone. And a wolverine had got in there and grabbed my horns and drug the thing probably 600 feet up the hill along with the cape. And he took one little tiny sack of meat, and that was it. So, but when we got there, we were like, oh my gosh, what happened? But it was a really cool trip, man. We saw, not everybody gets to see a muskox. We saw a muskox. It was 300 yards from our camp. We got out of bed and started glassing. What's that, a grizzly bear? No, man, that's a muskox.
Muskox, those are the ones with the big curly horns?
Yeah. The big, like.
Yeah, like the ones that kind of go off to the side.
Muskox in the middle of the Brooks Mountain Range. It was,
wow.
It was a pretty cool sight.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
amazing. So these train to hunt challenges.
Yeah.
I've been to your website, okay. traintohunt.com.
Yep.
And you've got these competitions that are in a bunch of different states. So there's one in Idaho and one in Washington. There's not a lot of videos on there much, you know, showing too much about what happens at those things.
Right.
But what is a train to hunt competition? What goes down with that?
Okay, so it's kind of on purpose that I
it's kind of secret.
It is. It's a little bit on what goes on in each competition, because I want people to be training, you know, everything.
Yeah.
I don't want them to.
Well, that's how SEALFIT was actually. Yeah. When I went down and did SEALFIT, you had no clue what you were going to be doing. You just showed up, and the recommendation was, hey, do the WADS, you know, the SEALFIT WADS, and you'll be good. You'll be ready. And that was the truth. But yeah, it was very similar. It was a secret. It's kind of weird.
Yeah. Side note, that Mark Devine, he's an interesting guy, man. I watched a podcast with Barbell Shrugged and him this morning. He's a really interesting cat.
Mark Devine's cool. I was actually just down there a couple weeks ago at his Unbeatable Mind Summit, and the dude's just a beast. I mean, he's like, you know, whatever, 50 now, I think, and just killing it.
Yeah. Just a remarkable guy. Just really interesting. All right, so at the Train to Hunt Challenge, what happens is it's a two-day event, and we run qualifiers. This year we have 7 qualifiers, and you have to qualify for the national championships. Now, keep in mind, Ben, that the first year that I decided to take on the Train to Hunt Challenge, I had no idea if anybody would do it. And the reason I even came up with it was because I launched the website and had a lot of people come in and start training, and they'd peter off about.
So you're putting out your workouts.
Yeah, putting on the work
daily.
Yeah, daily workouts.
People log in, they download their workout.
That's right.
And just like CrossFit Docs.
Yeah, basically. And I just noticed membership was really petering out right around November. And the reason is because everyone needs something to train for. And
how long ago was this that you launched this site?
Coming up on 5 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. So we ran it one full year, and then the next year was like, you know, we're not gaining any ground here. We need to give these guys something to train for. So I came up with this idea to put guys through, you know, basically a challenge course.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just the challenge course. It was just, I'm going to have them run, do a few exercises, shoot, run, a few exercises, shoot, and then take their time.
Mm-hmm.
And then analyze how they shoot and subtract
time and accuracy.
That's right. And subtract time from their total run time, or add time to their total run time for a overall time.
Right.
And then place them and see how it works out. Well, so that's how it started. And we just hung a Hoyt bow in a tree and said, if you think you can get through this course the fastest, pay your $10, sign the waiver, and go. Well, it's evolved now. In over the last 3 years, this will be the third year of what I'm calling the traveling race season. And last year was the first year that we did a national champion, because the first year I tried to set up each course so similar that I figured if I could just take whoever had the fastest time through the course, I could just crown them the national champion. Well, it's really tough when you're talking about setting up a course in Arizona and Colorado. Like, you couldn't get a whole lot different. Topography.
It's the same problem they run into at Spartan races. Right?
Yeah.
Like, they've got some courses that are good for the what they call the skinny mini, runners, right, and some right. courses that are very catered to the big strength and power athletes.
That's right. And it's tough to compare those two, this race winner versus this.
Who really truly is the best.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. So
the best fittest hunter.
That's right. So last year I said, let's bring them together. I'll take the top five placers in each division. We'll put them together and we'll just put them head to head in Colorado and we'll see who ends up winning. So this year we're doing the same thing. We're going to do these seven qualifiers. And on day one, the first thing you're going to do is you're going to do what I call a Hunter's 3D course. And partially the Train to Hunt Challenge course was born because of the standard 3D shoot is just too boring. If right. you've ever been to a 3D shoot, which you probably haven't, but here's the standard 3D shoot. You get in line at target one, wait for the group of, two to six people that are shooting in front of you to get done, and then out of the way, and then you shoot the next target. And then it gets backed up. It'll take you 4 hours to shoot 20 targets. Yeah, and
the targets are progressively farther away in 3D, aren't they?
They're 20 to 60 yards. And right. most of the time, sometimes you have to use rangefinder and so you know how far it is. Sometimes they don't let you use rangefinders. And that's usually what that whole idea, what that is testing, is your consistency, your accuracy, and your ability to judge yardage. Well, I put a spin on it and said, that doesn't feel like true hunting. True hunting is when you draw your bow and that animal faces you and now you don't have a shot.
Right.
So you have to hold it and hold it and hold right. it and hold it and hold it. So what I do is I set this
hold. Is that hard?
It is. If you hold your bow for 60 seconds, you start getting some
a little bit. How many pounds are you holding on like a typical compound?
60 to 70.
Right.
Is a typical compound. Like some people will shoot, to be legal, you only have to shoot like 40 to 45 pounds.
Right.
But most guys and even most women are shooting above 50. Most guys are shooting 60 to 70.
Yeah. Could you parallel that for our listeners who haven't shot a bow to like leaning over and doing a dumbbell row with a 50 or 60 or 70 pound weight?
Yeah.
And holding that with your elbow back?
That's right. If you got down in like a plank position, put your arm straight out, grab the dumbbell, and you held, say, a 30 or 40 pound dumbbell right here for 1 minute.
Oh, right, because you're counting for the weight that you're pushing out against.
Yeah,
kind of like a renegade row. Right?
Yeah, for 1 minute, and then put it down, and then try to be accurate after that.
That's a good exercise.
I'll have them draw kneeling, and then stand. And they can't even see this target when they're kneeling, so they draw, stand up. Now I can see the target, and they can shoot at will whenever they feel comfortable shooting, have draw, and move up from behind a tree and shoot. Just more realistic hunting situations where you're not just standing there all comfortable, getting your range finder. The animal's just not going to stand there. You're kind of in a hidden position, and most of the time you're either kneeling or you're behind something. So I set up this 3D course. And we just score it regularly. We have a 10. There's a 10 ring, an 8 ring, and anything that is outside the 8 ring scores a 5.
Yeah, the rings being the target.
That's right. That's right. And so that's one event. And I'd like to do that one first because it gives the competitors a chance to pair up and get to know each other a little bit and, just kind of buddy up. Then the second event happens in the afternoon, which is the meat pack, which is, I think, probably the most intimidating one, I get the most questions about it anyway. Because last year it was a little heavy. Last year I had them packing 200 pounds from point A to point B, and they could do it however they wanted. They could take 20 trips of 10. They could just pick up 10.
Oh, so you aren't carrying all 200 pounds at once necessarily.
They did not have to.
Packs. Is this like weights? Is this actual meat that you have them carrying?
Or? This is sandbags.
Okay, I was gonna say it could get expensive if you have multiple 200-pound piles of meat. Sand.
Yeah, it's sandbags. Yeah, okay. Sandbags. And it's broke up. Like the 200 pounds was broke up into 250s and 425s.
Yeah.
You could break it up however you want. It was really to simulate, all right, I'm away from my house, my truck, whatever. I've shot something, I've skinned it, I've quartered it. Now I need to get that meat from that point to my truck or to my house.
And how far are they?
Last year it was about anywhere between 600 yards and 800 yards. It wasn't that far.
Yeah.
It wasn't really that far. There were some. Now, Oregon.
So it's pretty anaerobic.
It is.
Because you're pushing that.
It is very.
It sounds.
Yeah.
I don't know if you heard much about Spartan World Championships this year, but we came up at one obstacle, and some guys took literally like, you know, 60, 70 minutes to get through this one obstacle. It was basically two 60 to 70 pound sandbags straight up the side of a mountain, about a half mile straight back. You can do it however you want, right? Like most guys, because it's very, very difficult to carry 140 pounds on your back.
Yeah.
And actually, the guy that wound up, he didn't win. He came in second. He was one of the few guys who was able to just grab both sandbags just because he's got deadlifting strength, and he just dragged him up the side of the mountain.
Really?
And back down. I leapfrogged it. Like I cleared both sandbags up and I put them on my shoulder and I took 10 steps and I was like, there is no freaking way. So I just dropped one and you know, would carry one up 20 feet and come back and grab the other. It sounds kind of similar physiologically to that.
Very similar.
Yeah.
So
these guys can carry however they want. They can hold it on their chest. They can put it on their back.
Last year they did. At the qualifiers, they could do it however they wanted. They could carry it. They could put it as much in their pack. And a lot of guys, what they did was they put 150 pounds in their pack, and then they just carry 25s in each hand and just go for it because it is.
Oh, so they have a pack they could put it in.
Yeah, absolutely. And to simulate the pack out, mm-hmm. you know, it's trying to get as close as we can to real hunting situations.
Yeah.
So this year, and this is for all you train to hunt people out there, this is inside, inside stuff. This year, I'm going to make it a lot more aerobic.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be
aerobic. Yeah.
It's going to be a lot further, mm-hmm. and it's going to be a lot lighter.
Yeah.
So I won't give away the exact weights, but it's not going to be a sprint. It's not going to.
Yeah.
You're not going to be as taxed.
Going a little bit more ancestral.
Yeah.
More persistent.
Exactly. And yeah. We need that component. We mm-hmm. need the component because, ideally, I'd have a whole day where we'd start at 3 in the morning and we'd go 15 miles.
Yeah.
You know, because that's really a good hard hunting day. But with time restraints, we're just going to have to go.
Yeah.
You know,
so you do the same kind of approach as 3D shoot in this pack, every single course that you're running America. And then the winners of each event come together and compete at one final championship.
Yeah. The top three from each division will come together for a championship on Sunday. Now on Sunday, it's kind of the grand finale. The shooting portion of the Train Hunt Challenge is worth 25% of your total score,
mm-hmm.
and the meat pack is worth 25% of your total score because you can be a really good archer and not necessarily have the other components.
Right.
You could win. You could be a great archer, but you can't.
You could just basically be a fat guy who shoots good.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Or you could be a beast of a man, and like just a pack mule that everybody calls when they kill stuff because you can get them out of the mountains, but you can't shoot with a hill of beans. So it's worth 25% of your score. On Sunday, we run what's called the Train Hunt Challenge course, and this is a run, exercise, shoot. You have penalties for shooting, for missing a target.
Mm-hmm.
If you miss a target, it's 25 burpees with your pack on.
Oh, burpees.
Yeah, with your pack on.
Yeah. Who's reffing the burpees? They run into this problem in Spartans where some guys' burpees are different than others.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, some guys will go chest to ground, feet out, stand up, jump, arms above the head.
Yeah.
Some guys will read the rules that say technically a burpee is your chest going lower than your feet and then your head going higher than your feet. So they'll just like touch their chest to the ground and almost do like this wormy action on the ground.
Right.
It's not even a burpee.
Right. All right, so I helped eliminate a lot of that gray area
mm-hmm.
because I didn't want my judges to be put in a situation where they had to basically stop somebody and say, you got to do them all over because
right.
you were doing the worm. And what I did was I put lines on the ground
mm-hmm.
and you got to do a burpee over here and then you got to get over here and do your next one.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't care.
Yeah. So you have to be vertical between each burpee.
I mean, you can hunch over and go over instead of standing all the way up.
Yeah. But, Joe, DeSanta, Robert, Coble, you guys, I hope you're watching this or listening. That's how you need to start doing things.
That's
I'm
how
you.
That's how you do it.
Ken's figured it out.
Yeah, that's right.
It's two vertical lines.
Two vertical lines. Yeah. You do a burpee over here, burpee over here, burpee over here. And that way, if you're touching your chest on the ground over here, you have to get up and walk over here.
Yeah. Of course, what they're doing in the Spartans is they've got a GoPro at each of the burpee station, the penalty stations. And if you're on the podium or you're in the cash, or you're in any position, they'll review to make sure that you did. In this case, it's 30, so they'll check your camera footage to make sure that you really. So they have a good like 4 to 5 hours between the end of the race and the award ceremony for you to be able to dispute, or for them to be able to review footage from the top finishers. And so then they just started doing that with cameras.
And they have to do that with a Spartan race because you guys were, I mean, I don't know how many guys are running at a time, but.
And there's a lot of, it sounds like you don't have a ton of burpee stations or.
We have six.
Six, okay. So that's a fair amount.
There's six, there's six possible burpee stations. Some people only end up doing, 25 burpees at the burpee station. So for instance, man, we'll go run and then we'll go 50 pound ground, sandbag ground to shoulder. Bag has to touch the ground. Mm-hmm. The bag has to get on your shoulder, and you have to stand up.
Yeah.
Now there's been some in the past. Some judges saying, I'm having a tough time having some people stand all the way up. So this year, what I may do is have them touch the ground, and they got to throw the sandbag over their shoulder, mm-hmm. and then turn around and throw it and touch the ground, throw it over their shoulder, just to alleviate some of that gray area. I want it real black and white. You did it. You didn't. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
We do. And then they'll shoot, and then they'll go on to the next station, and they'll pick up 70 pounds.
Carrying their bow with them in between stations.
Carrying their bow, yeah. Always having your bow. The bow always has arrows in the quiver, or your arrows are in your backpack, too, so you don't fall on an arrow when you're running. You get to the next station, you do the exercise there, which is, they say, it's 400-meter run up the hill with a 70-pound pack and your bow. Mm-hmm. So you go up and around the around the cone, judges just make sure they see you go around the cone, come back down, shoot.
Right.
If you hit the target, you move.
You're not doing chip timing yet.
No, we're not. Not yet, but it's around the corner. Yeah. It is. It's something that as we get bigger, it's just an obstacle that I continue to have to get over is how to deal with more people. Mm-hmm. More people. How can I be more inclusive?
Yeah, that's the trick is scalability. I mean, have you done an obstacle race before, like a Tough Mudder?
It's on my list of things.
You'd probably be pretty good at them if you put together these train hunt competitions. Yeah. And they've run into a lot of scalability issues as far as like you have your elite waves that go and they can go fast and the obstacles aren't gummed up. But, I've gone back after running in the elite wave and helped others through other waves. And I mean, sometimes you're standing there for like, 5 minutes just waiting to get on an obstacle to complete. It's not a race anymore. It's just kind of going through it.
That's right.
So who wins these things?
The right guys. They do. I did a lot of thinking about how to avoid allowing the professional shooter to win and the cross country runner who takes their recurve and just kind of flings arrows as they run by from winning. And that's where the 25 burpee penalty comes in. And that's where the meat pack comes in. The guys who win these are legit shooting fit guys. Mm-hmm. They
do you compete or you just
I don't
you just ref them?
I don't. I usually run the courses once I set them up to see if there's any snags, if there's any places on the trail where somebody could get lost or anything like that. But unfortunately, I don't get to do my own.
These guys are pretty fit, huh?
These guys are pretty fit, man. There's some guys out there, God bless them, man. They just get out there and it's not really about competing against others. It's about being able to say, I did this.
I
got out there and did it. Yeah. And you probably see a lot of it in the Spartan race, but you wouldn't guess the guys are competing when it's all said and done because there's a lot of camaraderie and kind of we're all in this together and a lot of pats on the back. And like I was telling somebody prior to the national championship was that because it was the first time they'd ever seen a CrossFit or a train to hunt competition.
Right.
And I said, this is going to be the only place you'll ever see somebody go up, hand somebody a water, help them out with their backpack, take their bow, make sure they're okay. And they have no idea. They've never talked to this person before ever. And they're a competitor.
Yeah.
It's a real, there's a lot of friendships built in these competitions and a lot of, I think that what happens, Ben, is that kind of the high go, high motivated, elite, kind of out of the box, fitness guys, I think a lot of times we feel like we live on an island because our whole lives we've had a tough time finding training partners and finding hunting partners and finding people who kind of tick the same way we tick. Mm-hmm. And what I'm finding is that these competitions are attracting a lot of these guys who felt like they lived on an island for a long time, and they all come together and they find out they're like-minded, they live close to each other. There's guys right now, there's 15 guys right now in Colorado that get together at least twice a week, and they work out specifically for the Train Hunt Challenge. Because they met at the Train Hunt Challenge last year, and they're going to do better this year.
How many people are doing this? Do you have any idea?
Yeah. Last year, I think we ran 460 total people through. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty small scale still.
Yeah.
And I really am trying.
Is that how many people are doing the competitions? Do you have more people than that actually going to your website and doing the workouts?
Right now, there's somewhere between 400 and 500 people doing the workouts every day. And the competitions are drawing between 400 and 500 people. And then the spectators are coming in. Again, this will only be the third year of the of the traveling competition. And I don't advertise. I do some flyers. I get some guys some boots on the ground at each spot and have them spread the word. But inevitably, it always comes about that I'll go to a site and start setting up, and somebody will say, what do you got going here? Oh, it's the Training on the Challenge. Oh, I never heard about it. And he's local, and he's an archer. Yeah. And
where do you do these, on private land, like ranches and stuff like that? Or?
No, what I do is I recruit bow clubs from different towns, like in Eugene, the Cascadian Bowmen. Give them a call and say, hey, you guys have anything going on this weekend? Mm-hmm. And they say, well, I don't. I said, well, this is who I am. This is what I want to do. This is what I'll pay.
So you can, like, use their 3D range and everything.
Yeah, I use their targets in the range, and I give them a percentage of the entry fee.
Yeah.
And it works pretty well. It's pretty everything's already set up. I have targets there. I would like to get on a little bit bigger scale and possibly be able to run more people at a time. So I can – right now I'm kind of walled up at about 130 people per event just because of the logistics. You can't have somebody waiting. You can't.
Right.
But you're a little bit limited to how many shooting stations you can get on one target and have very similar shots. Because it's first come, first serve. The first person there, they can go station number one, and then you just file in, you all take a shot, and then you move on, and it's first come, first serve. But again, I don't want the last guy there to have a huge disadvantage and can't even see the target.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, if you look at Ironman Triathlon, right, they ran into a similar issue. And they went a different way than Spartan. Like, Spartan has simply added more waves, right? Like, you just go farther into the night.
Right.
Ironman has added more races, right? Like, more locations. So there's just, like, tons of, you know, there were, like, 12 initially. Now there's, like, 40-plus races around the globe because they top them off at, you know, whatever, 1,500 people.
Right.
And they just add another race and another race. That's right. And it's a good model for them. Sounds like you just have to hook up with a lot of archery clubs.
Yeah, and it's not hard to do. Yeah. It's not. I can tell you that right now.
Are you having to go to each of these races, or do you have people like certified coaches, things like that?
No, I am. If it's happening, if it's a train hunt event, it's me. Mm-hmm. If it's a workout, if it's an event, if it's an email, if it's a phone call, I wear all hats right now.
Yeah.
But I do have some guys lined up that are. I mean, this is a training year. I got six guys right now that are lined up. That just really want to be part of it and see the future in it and want to be direct. And so I'm calling them future directors. And so I'm going to train them on how to facilitate an event start to finish.
Yeah.
And then next year I'll turn over the events to these six guys, and then I'll expand. I'm going to go to Texas, Pennsylvania, California, and I'm going to try and get another one out there in the East Coast somewhere, like Arkansas, Alabama, someplace like that. But then I'll get two or three phone calls a week about how can I get a Train Hunt Challenge in my state.
Yeah. Wow.
And I just there's just not enough of me to go around.
Yeah. See, that's a smart move though. Get more boots on the ground.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And I did contemplate, you know what, let's just go huge. I'll figure it out when we get there. And then I decided, you know, really what I need to focus on is making a really great event. And if you have a great event, people will come travel. People will come to you. If you have a great event, people will travel miles and miles to come to you.
Yeah. So, of course, the other thing Ironman did is they started charging like $1,000 to race. So there's that.
Right, right.
So just,
yeah, they have a few more logistics.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but they're also not shooting arrows. You know,
they're not.
Like they're just swimming. Do you guys do water? Do you have any water crossings?
Not yet. Not yet. Yeah. This thing is going to take on a life of its own, and the limitations there. You know, the lid's off the jar.
Yeah, no, it will. I mean, I guarantee that as people become more aware. I was actually talking to Tawny Prazak from Endurance Planet this morning about this. We were doing a podcast. She was asking me about fitness or nutrition trends for 2015.
Yeah.
And so people are going to become more aware of the functional and the psychological and the physical benefits of gathering your own food. Whether gathering your own food is spending time in the backyard garden, pushing a wheelbarrow around, or trekking up a mountainside to get an animal.
Right.
And I think that form of functional fitness, right, rather than just exercising for exercise's sake, or exercising so you've got the top number on the whiteboard, right? You're actually exercising to bring back food to your family, or to provide for somebody, you know, if it's not you, for somebody. And I think like that's, to me, the ultimate form of functional fitness, right?
For sure. You're speaking my language, man. Yeah. I mean, to me, that is the ultimate goal, is to be the ultimate provider. And, you know, I listened to the Man Show. Is that what it was? They had the guy on
Man Show.
No,
the Art of Manliness.
The Art of Manliness.
Art of Manliness. Yeah, Brett McKay.
Yeah.
Guy.
And the providing portion of that, I was like, you're spot on. Whether you're providing meat or growing a garden, or it's some way, shape, or form, you are constantly providing for your community, whether it just be your family or your neighbors, whatever that might be. It is part of something that I take pride in. It's something that, you know, do we have to hunt in order to survive? The answer is no, but there is something really pure about knowing exactly where that meat came from, how it was handled from the time it was killed to the time it was in your stomach.
Yeah.
And the fact that you were able to do that, and you were able to provide that for your family, it's just a different world we live in now than it was, you know, just 50 years ago, or not even that long ago. I mean, number one, there wasn't that many bow hunters.
Yeah.
Because you only bow hunted if you couldn't afford a rifle.
Right.
And number two, it's everything's really connected. We get into this whole thing about America being lazy, and we're getting bigger and bigger because of convenience. And I think that at the heart of people, they really do, and maybe men specifically, they do want that adventure. They want to fulfill what their ancestors were doing. I believe that technology is probably advancing faster than our DNA, and so we have this rub that goes on inside of us about, we're fighting ourselves about wanting to provide and wanting to be out in nature, and we feel, you know, and wanting to play that role. And yet there's a lot of things that happen in society and the community in the United States that are saying that may not be all right.
Yeah. No, I mean, get out, get your hands dirty. You experience life. You know, that's what you hear a lot of people say about like obstacle racing, is like the first time they get their back all cut up with barbed wire and cross the finish line, you know, bleeding with their feet burned from jumping over the fire. It's like, you know, you'd think they'd be just bawling at the finish line, and it's the first time they've actually lived.
Yeah.
Or the first time in a long time since they've been a kid that they've just like gone out and just played and gotten scraped up. And it's a very, very cool feeling that I think we'll see more and more people tapping into.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I personally have gotten pretty good at being gassed and nailing a target from 30 feet with a spear. So I may have to take the next step here and grab a bow.
Yeah, I'd love to see it.
And try out one of these competitions. So they sound pretty sick. So Ken Claremont, trainhunt.com.
Yes, sir.
Thanks for coming on the show, man.
You bet. Thank you. It's an honor. Thank you.
All right, folks. Thanks for tuning in.
Visit BenGreenfieldFitness.com for even more cutting-edge fitness, nutrition, and performance advice.